As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
This is The Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to the Athletic Football Show. I'm Robert Mays. Fun show for you guys today. We are officially in the pre-free agency period here. So we are getting ready to break down all of the players that are available, where they might go, all that stuff. And I could think of no better way to start wading into those waters than with the Athletic's free agency expert himself, my good buddy, Shio Kapadia. Shio, how you doing, man?
For better or worse, I guess, right? It feels like, every year, March 1st comes around, and I'm like, whoa, we got like 2 weeks to form, we've watched all these guys, but you have to sort of, really form your opinions. What are they worth? Where would they fit? All those different things. So this will be a good exercise for both of us, I think.
So for people that don't know, you go through and you do a top 50 free agents list. Even before I worked here, it was a pretty consistent resource for me. Now that I'm here, it's a tab that's open in my browser constantly. So you went and ranked them, and we're going to talk about not every player on that list. That would be a 6-hour podcast, but I want to get into some of the guys at the top of the list and then some of the positions that are a little flush, and then just look at free agency approach within those positions. Do you want to go at the high end? Do you want to see if you can get a bargain? So using a couple markers, whether they be edge rushers, wide receivers, to give us a window into some thinking about this free agent class. So let's start with a bit of free agent news that happened earlier today. About, 3 or 4 hours before we started recording this, I've already talked to Aaron Reese on a breaking news podcast about it, but J.J. Watt signs with the Cardinals. So a bit of a dark horse, not a team that had typically been connected to him to this point in the process. A lot of people had said that he was probably going to end up with a contender. Whether you would put the Cardinals in that group is something we can talk about here in a second. But what was your initial reaction when you heard about the Watt contract and how much he got from Arizona?
I was surprised. Like you mentioned, they were not a team on my radar as somebody who might make a play for him. And even the salary, I looked at it and I thought, all right, there, the Texans are releasing him because he's got 1 year, $17.5 million. And I know whenever that happens, the team usually floats out there, well, we wanted to do right by the player and all this stuff. And, usually, sometimes it's the case, but usually I roll my eyes and think, well, no, I don't think anyone's going to pay him $17.5 million. So to get 2 years, $31 million, that was higher than I anticipated. This is like the definition to me of a boom or bust signing. Certainly he's still a very good player when he plays, but this is somebody who missed 32 games from 2016 to 2019 and is now 32 years old. So it could work out for him. I still think, like I said, he's very effective when he plays, but I was a little bit surprised that Arizona thought this was their best use of financial resources.
It's funny. We talked about this in the pod with Aaron. If you look at what the Cardinals were last year on defense, they were this kind of blitz happy, throw it all together pass rush. It wasn't relying on guys who were true number one players, even though Hassan Reddick was very good for them. But it looked like a defense that was trying to have a piecemeal way to get after the passer. A lot of blitzing, a lot of stunts, all of that. Now, they have these two highly paid pass rushers, and the guys that they used to piece together the pass rush last year are free agents, like Reddick. So they're almost going to do this really crazy and quick 180 in terms of how they approach rushing the passer next year, possibly, with Watt and Chandler Jones there. So it's going to be interesting to see stylistically how they may pivot with these two guys. If you look at the money, I agree it's a lot. And the injury thing, I always forget, like, guys get hurt. Like, when I'm seeing with Will Fuller, who we'll talk about later today, it's like, I got to remember, it's not about what he is when he's on the field. Like, you have to make bets on guys. And Watt has been hurt a lot. He's about to be 32 years old, I believe, which I'm not in a position to talk about the decline of 32-year-old people as I near my 34th birthday here. But I do think that you have to take that stuff into account. But if you look at it, $15.5 million a year would be 18th. In AAV among edge rushers in the NFL. Some of those guys on that list are a little bit bumped up because of franchise tags. Guys like Matthew Judon, Leonard Williams, Bud Dupree, you know, D Ford and Von Miller are cut candidates. So that may be a little bit misleading, but 18th feels about right. Even with the injury history, when you think about what he could be capable of, that money per year isn't necessarily shocking to me. I'm surprised that he was more interested in taking that money per year than ending up on a team that's a ready-made playoff contender. That's, to me, the thing that's a little bit surprising.
That's the thing, because when I looked at this Cardinals team going into the offseason, I was like, okay, they need to get their offense fixed, whether it's Cliff Kingsbury coming up with answers, whether it's personnel on the offensive line, whether it's adding different weapons around DeAndre Hopkins. It's like, that's their path. They've got Kyler Murray on his rookie contract. Figure out the offense. And even look at last year, right? They were 10th, I think, in defensive DVOA, like you were mentioning. They sort of figured out some ways to maximize the talent they had on that side of the ball. So this, I guess, raises their ceiling a little bit on defense, but given the guys that they're going to lose, I'm not sure how much. Now you get Chandler Jones back. So again, yeah, it could be a very good defense, but I didn't look at this move and think, oh my gosh, wow, the Cardinals, I got to get them in my Super Bowl contenders now, because I don't know what they're going to do on offense. They didn't show last year that they could figure it out. And so I'm going to be skeptical there anyway. So You're probably right. When you look at the position, it may not be that crazy. You know, a guy like Jason Pierre-Paul got what, 12.5, 13 million last year. Robert Quinn got 14 million. So it isn't like the ballpark.
Let's not talk about that.
Okay. So it is in the ballpark of kind of that, you know, early 30s, very good or potentially very good pass rusher. But I just looked at it and thought, man, could they have used that money somewhere else to kind of raise the ceiling on what this team can be?
And that's kind of why it's a little bit dangerous to say they're a team on the rise. Maybe he can help push them over the top, because the thing that put them on the rise last year was this out of nowhere weird defense
right. That
now is being completely remade. You lose. I mean, Patrick Peterson wasn't very good last season. It's not like their cornerback play was stellar, but they have two guys hitting free agency that were starting corners for them last year. So I just don't know what to make of them, because I don't know if their defense is going to be better or worse with all of these changes that are going to be made. But if it's worse, they need the offense to be better. And at this point, I don't have a ton of faith in that happening. They're in such a strange place. If you had told me this is where the Cardinals would be in March of 2021 and listed out all of the specific things, I just would never have believed it. It's just such a strange road they've taken here, even if they were a pretty decent team last season.
Yeah, you're right. I would have been disappointed. Like when they hired Kingsbury and got Kyler Murray and you said, all right, they're going into year three, this is what they are, I would have been like, ooh, you know, I would have hoped then, if I was a Cardinals fan, that we're talking about like Kyler Murray among the top five most efficient quarterbacks in the NFL and this offense that is really tough to defend and just can be a juggernaut against great defenses. And so maybe it's just me being like a snob saying, you know, defense is too variable and who cares? All right.
I totally agree.
But that's how I feel. I mean, basically, if they don't figure out the offense, this signing, J.J. Watt can have 13 sacks next year, and it's probably not going to matter. Cliff Kingsbury is probably going to get fired after next year. I mean, I think that's a pretty, I don't want to say fact, because that's overstating it, but that is how I feel going into this year.
I'm with you. And I think that's why whatever the defense looks like, I just, again, I don't know how to, I can't put my finger on this team. They're very, very hard to kind of understand in terms of what their identity is, what they want to be, what they could be. Anything is on the table for them in 2021. If they were a 5-11 team next year, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever. If they went 12-4, I could also see that happening. Just very strange. I also want one more note before we move on, because I think this kind of gets into the conversation we're about to have. I think Watt getting $23 million guaranteed at age almost 32 and with all that injury history and the fact that he didn't have a ton of production last year, that is a window into the idea that even with a crunch cap, if you want guys are going to get paid. The guys at the top, they are not going to be depressed. If you think about what somebody like Shaq Barrett is worth, if J.J. Watt is worth $15.5 million a year, I still think we're going to see those deals up near the top of the market if teams are motivated to hand them out. And there are going to be teams that are.
I totally agree. And that's not, you know, that's not like the top 10 guys. I mean, that could be like the top 25. I don't know what the number is, but I do think there are going to be a lot of players getting big deals. And even that middle tier, like I almost wonder if we're overrating how many guys are going to have to settle for 1-year deals and how much this cap crunch is going to affect them. Because as we know, I mean, you can sign a guy to a 4-year deal, make his base salary in 2021 very low, hand him a big signing bonus that gets spread over 3 or 4 years. And if you feel like these TV contracts are getting done and that there's going to be fans in stands and that the cap's going to go back up, then you're not really taking on that much risk. So I am curious, you know, we're spending a lot. I know a lot of people are spending time talking about the cap and how it's going to affect how teams spend, and it very well could, but I wonder if we're kind of overstating that a little bit.
So that's going to be tomorrow's podcast with me and Lindsay. So we are going to get into that from all sides. So if you guys want to hear more about just the dynamics that might affect free agency next year, that is the second show we have on the slate. So please tune in for that. But we're going to get into the guys near the top of the market here, the top 50 players that you have listed out, Sheil. And we're going to start with easily the most annoying part of the free agency period every single year. And it's the guys that you have to put at the top of your list, but probably aren't going to be free agents anyway. So looking at your top 10, the guys you have at the top, Dak Prescott is number one. What is the percent chance that Dak Prescott is actually going to be a free agent? Is it actually 0%?
I mean, I've learned in like probability to usually don't do 0. So yeah, why don't we give it 1% just
in case? All right, so Dak Prescott is not going to be a free agent. Allen Robinson is number 2 on your list. This one gets interesting because I think it's hard to imagine a world where he doesn't get tagged even if they have no intention of keeping him long term, right? You have a front office that is incentivized to win immediately. I don't think they're going to want to wait till the 2022 draft to get a third round pick for Allen Robinson, right? That just doesn't seem like the smartest thing. Either he's on the team next year or I think they tag him and try to trade him. So again, he wouldn't be a part of the free agency conversation.
I think this is a tricky one because there are a few different aspects of this. One is, all right, you tag him and now that's eating up space on your salary cap and could potentially prevent you from doing other things. Now, you know, I think they're pretty directionless right now. We don't know what they're doing at quarterback, so I don't know how much they actually want to do. So maybe that's not a concern, but that is something to keep in mind. You know, you're going to be up against it and it limits your resources until you actually trade him. And then the trade market is sort of tough for him because if you're a team that has cap space to sign Allen Robinson and there are some other wide receivers available, do you really want to give up whatever it would take, a second round pick, a first round pick? I don't know. So you're giving up that draft pick for the right to basically then sign him to the top of the market, which is going to be $20 million a year. I mean, you have to really, really like him. I really like Allen Robinson. I mean, I was surprised looking up the numbers that only Stephon Diggs and DeAndre Hopkins have had more receiving yards than him over the last 2 years. And when you look at his quarterback play, that's amazing. And so you can feel pretty safe if you're acquiring him that you're going to get production out of him. But I don't know. What do you think that market would be like? Would teams be jumping to do that?
So here's the reason I think that teams would be. I do think that he is a cut above the players who are eventually going to be available in free agency. So let's say, and the two guys just below him on this list, Chris Godwin and Kenny Galladay are both franchised, which I think is more likely than not, wouldn't you? That seems like it's on the horizon.
Yeah, I'm not ready to say lock, but I would say I would agree with more likely than not, yes.
So let's say those two guys are gone. If those two guys are off the board, who is the best wide receiver available in free agency?
Yeah, it's probably, I mean, it's probably what, Corey Davis or Juju Smith-Schuster, I would say.
And that to me is a significant step down. And I think if you talk to people around the league about how they want to spend their resources at that position, they would also agree that it's a significant step down from Allen Robinson to that class of player. I think by trading for him on the tag, if it's like a second round pick or whatever, let's say it's the D Ford trade, okay? I think that's worth paying more than overpaying a guy like Corey Davis or somebody you think is a significant step down from Allen Robinson. I actually don't mind that, even if it doesn't on its face look like a smart way to use resources because you're trading a pick and then paying a guy.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot. Wide receiver is going to be interesting because there's so much at play. You know, there could be teams who look at some of the rookie wide receivers and would look at Justin Jefferson and say that's going to start. You know, I don't know if that is going to be the norm. I don't think it's going to be, but you know how teams talk themselves into stuff and trends. And hey, we could just use a, you know, one of our picks on a wide receiver. These guys are ready to play right away. So I think you're right. I think there would be at least one team, given that he's just like a rock solid number one wide receiver. Line him up out wide. He can win in a variety of ways. If we have a good quarterback, we have a guy who's going to be crazy productive. And you know, if he wants to be in that place, then you have an avenue towards signing him. So I would agree with you, especially if it's a second round pick. You know, then I think you should definitely be able to get something done.
Also, you have to take into account that teams trading for him would then be possibilities, even if they weren't attractive destinations. Maybe he doesn't want to sign in Washington, but what if Washington trades a second round pick for him? Then he's there. Then he's not actually a free agent. So you may put yourself in play, even if you're a team that if you were just handing him a contract, he wouldn't want to come there. So I also think that's something to take into consideration.
Sure.
But it's hard for me to imagine the Bears just letting him walk. They might. I have no inside information on this. I think that it's a lot of people are kind of looking at it as sort of a mystery. I have no idea what's going to happen, but it's hard for me to imagine the Bears just letting him walk out the door for nothing or a third round compensatory pick in whatever year. Godwin, same deal. 25 years old. He is beloved there. I've never heard reviews of a player that the way that I heard about Chris Godwin. I wrote about him before the Super Bowl. Yeah. I cannot imagine him not being there. I think he will be tagged as well. Justin Simmons, a lot of reports saying that he will likely be tagged again in Denver and they'll try to work out a long-term deal. He's number four on your list. The Broncos have a ton of financial flexibility this year. After releasing AJ Boye and Jarrell Casey, they could have even more if they decide to move on from Von Miller. So they have the motivation and the ability to kind of keep him on board. Number eight on your list is Kenny Golladay. I also think he's a prime tag candidate when you think about what the Lions need. They have no receivers. All their other ones are hitting free agency. And I also think the Jared Goff trade makes me think differently about what they might do with Golladay. Bringing Goff back in that trade and wanting to possibly be a decent offense and not tearing it all down from the start makes me think they're more likely to bring back a guy like Golladay than they would have been if they were really trying to tear this thing down to the studs.
Yeah, that's probably right. And, you know, part of it is when we look at tanking or rebuilding or whatever you want to call it, like you do need some sort of infrastructure to be able to evaluate the young players on your roster. Like you can't just start, you know, 11 terrible players and say, hey, we're going to get the first pick next year and we're going to draft our quarterback then. And so Golladay is a little bit tricky. You know, only played 5 games last year because of the hip injury, but it was fantastic, I thought, in 2018 and 19. Really a player who, if you look at some of the splits in their performance when he was on the field versus when he wasn't on the field, like a legit difference maker. Again, I think he averaged, 16 yards per reception. So a downfield threat for you with a very unique skill set. So to me, it would make sense if I were the Lions, not only the tag, I mean, I would be looking into signing him long term, unless they have issues with him that we don't know about. But I mean, the guy's only 27 years old. He's shown what he can do. You're starting this new era. I would really look into that.
Two more guys. Number 14 on your list, Brandon Scherff. We talked about him a little bit on the podcast that I did with Nate last week. I envision him being back in Washington. Whether it's on, I think that they will come to some sort of agreement where he will be in Washington next season. I do not think he'll be a free agent. And Taylor Moten, who is on the Panthers right tackle, he's 18th on your list. Another team with the financial flexibility and the motivation to keep him around. I also think that he'll be a Panther next year, will not be hitting free agency. Is there anybody else that you had to list that you are a little bit But you're kind of hesitant about saying they will be a free agent.
You know, I don't know what the Ravens are going to do with Judon and Ngakoue. I mean, could you tag and trade a guy like Yannick Ngakoue? Maybe,
sure.
You know. So Aaron Jones, is there any way they tag Aaron Jones? That tag number is so low, right?
It's so low, but about $8 million for running backs this year?
1 year, $8 million?
I just think that's really hard to justify when you just picked a running back in the second round last season, when you have other needs. That's just tough for me to envision. I just expect him and Corey Linsley to move on. Maybe that's wrong, but it's the reason it's $8 million is because the cap is so depressed. Like, it looks low, but there's a reason that it's low. It's because you don't have as much money to throw around. So I don't know. That's tough for me. I think those are the guys. And the other one I think could be a possibility is Carl Lawson, just because the Bengals have some money. You know, we'll see what they do with Geno Atkins, for example. If they think he's a foundational piece, maybe they bring him back. But he's somebody we will get to. He is not on our likely-to-be-tagged list.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So moving on from the guys that we think will be tagged, let's get to the best of the rest, the guys near the top of your list that we don't think will be tagged for one reason or another. The first guy on there is Leonard Williams of the Giants. The reason we don't think he'll be tagged is because he was tagged last year. And that is a ton of money for a defensive lineman to eat up in the 130% of what he made last season. And that just doesn't seem feasible for a team that doesn't have that much cap space right now. So Leonard Williams is really high on your list. You put him fifth. Why, in your mind, does he deserve to be up there?
Yeah, this time last year, I was crushing Dave Gettleman for trading two picks for Leonard Williams and then using the franchise tag on him. But the guy had a fantastic year. I mean, the numbers were not hollow. They were not misleading. 11.5 sacks and 30 quarterback hits. I mean, it's crazy when you look at what he did last year compared to the rest of his career. He was so disruptive.
He had half a sack with the Giants in 2019.
So that's the risk, right? I mean, if you're, because really what you're talking about with Leonard Williams is I had the floor for him as like the Kenny Clark deal, which was about $17.5 million, and the ceiling would be the DeForest Buckner deal, which is $21 million. And so he's probably going to come in somewhere in that range if he hits free agency. And so I don't know. I mean, I would be a little hesitant. You know, what you just mentioned, for a guy to have half a sack the year before and then be paying him close to $20 million would make me nervous. Now, having said that, the stats earlier in his career didn't always tell the story. Like, he's always been a quality starter. So the high floor is probably there. But, you know, you don't pay basically what he's going to get for the player you saw, I think, before 2020.
I tend to agree with you. But I do think that there are reasons that last year might not be a mirage. If you look at the ways he lined up prior to last season, he spent a vast majority of his time as an interior player. We know it's harder to generate pass rushing stats as an interior player. Last year, it was almost an even 50-50 split between where lining up on the edge and lining up inside. And then, so if you look at it, that's why the numbers are skewed a little bit, because he had 62 pressures, which among interior defensive linemen would have been third in the league behind Aaron Donald and Stephon Tuitt, according to Pro Football Focus. But if you're spending half your time outside, then are those numbers actually indicative of you being that dominant of an interior rusher? So I think that there are risks involved, but I also think his floor is so high that you're only going to get burned so much. A team like the Panthers, to me, makes perfect sense. They need pass rushing help along with Brian Burns. If they put him on the left side, they can move him inside in certain pass rush situations. If you want Gross Matos, him and Burns on the field at the same time, they have a little money to throw around. I just think he's versatile and has shown he can play a bunch of different positions and generate some pass rush productivity from those positions. So I think that the floor is high, and there is a chance that the guy you saw last year is the guy you'll see going forward as a pass rusher.
Yeah, especially with defensive linemen, I think there are like cases of this where they mature later and then, you know, they're still playing really well into the. I mean, we just talked about J.J. Watt's not the best example, but you see guys in their 30s playing really well. So, yeah, I think that's right. I mean, to me, if you're the Giants, you've invested a lot in the guy and he played really well in your scheme. If you're going to spend a lot of money on a pass rusher or like a front seven player in free agency, I could see it making sense for them to just be like, we know what we have here. Let's just bring Leonard Williams back. So maybe that's a case where they just pay him top of the market and he returns to the Giants.
I could see that as well, because they're a team that doesn't have a lot of space right now when you look at it, but they have some cuts to make. If they want to move on from Kevin Zeitler, if they want to move on from Golden Tate, they can free up a decent amount of cap space. That's another team. We talked about it with Nate last week. I have no idea what the Giants are. Like, just absolutely no idea. They could go in a couple different directions. And what they want to be and what the vision is very muddled to me. But if Leonard Williams and bringing him back is part of that vision, I would completely understand it.
And every time you mention Carolina, I have that thought. I'm like, would that player make sense? I don't really know what they, you know, what they want to do, what they're going to do. So yeah, with some of these teams, it is tough. And I think, like you guys talked about, we will learn based on what they do in the next, 6 weeks or so. Actually, what they think their direction is.
So let's get to the next guy on your list. Trent Williams is sixth. I mean, it's easy to understand the appeal. 32 years old last year, comes back after missing the previous season with Washington and plays at an all-pro level. I mean, he was one of the best left tackles in the league last year. And even at age 32, he still moves unlike any other player at that position. I think he's still the best run blocking left tackle in the league. That scheme really unlocks him. You saw what he could do in San Francisco. He's going to have a market. And according to his contract and the trade stipulations, when he went to the Niners, he cannot be tagged. So he will get a long-term deal somewhere. Do you see him ending up back in San Francisco? And if not, are there other teams that you think would make sense for him?
Yeah, I mean, the floor is probably like around $17 million for him. And Bakhtiari got $23 million from the Packers last year per year. And that was without like getting out there, testing the market, creating a bidding war, whatever. So you really could be looking at a $20 million per year tackle. Brandon Thorne, friend of the show and your friend, we did a piece just ranking all the offensive linemen today on The Athletic. And he was just gushing over
Trent
about
that.
Williams. Yeah, I'm like, well, did you see him slip in any? He's like, listen, anything, any area he slipped in, he like made up for with other things. So, I mean, he agreed with you that he thought he was maybe the best tackle in the NFL last season. So I do think it makes sense for the 49ers to bring him back. The Chargers, they've got to do something at left tackle. I don't know if they want to shop in the, 33-year-old left tackle market, but if you're looking for kind of a leader and a guy to protect Justin Herbert, that wouldn't be a terrible idea. And then I think you were thinking maybe the Colts as well, right?
I mean, they have space and they have a need. So I mean, that just makes sense to me. If I were the Colts, if I were throwing around $18 million a year and I had a need at receiver and I had a need at tackle, I'd give it to the tackle and I'd figure out receiver later. I mean, you think about scarcity. Let's just look at this list, and we're going to get into this in a little bit. Look at how many functional receivers are going to be available on the market, and look how many even above average left tackles are available. This is unicorn stuff. You don't have left tackles hit free agency. The second that Garrett Bowles looked competent, the Broncos gave him a top of the market deal. That's how these contracts go at that position. And that's why if he gets out of San Francisco, there will be no shortage of teams that'll come knocking, because it's when you find one, it's worth its weight in gold. It really is.
That Bowles deal was like the most under the radar $17 million. I think I didn't notice it till like 2 weeks later. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? They signed him in season? I know he played well last year, but I was shocked by that. And yeah, to your point, I know we'll get to some of the other guys, but the trade guy to keep in mind there is Orlando Brown, right? I mean, if he gets, if the Ravens trade him, he's sort of the little X factor in this, where like a team like the Chargers, would they rather give up something to get an Orlando Brown who's what, 24, 25 years old on the last year of a rookie deal, and just make him your guy for like the next decade? Or would it make sense for them to shop in free agency?
It's funny. I mean, it's not the same, obviously, because quarterback is quarterback, but Trent Williams kind of feels like the Tom Brady thing here, where it's even getting a little bit older, he's still going to be able to do everything you want him to do. And we're going to be talking about younger guys more than we're going to be talking about him. You know, like you said, with Orlando Brown, I just think that he could be a transformative piece for the right offense that needs a guy at that position. All right. I want to talk about a couple position groups here. And I think a few of them, looking at your list, jump out. And some of them, I think we can read into why. Some, I think it just might be a glut at that position this year. So where I want to start is edge rusher, because essentially everybody just outside your top 10 is an edge rusher. That's where they're all kind of stacked up in this group. So if you just going down the list, number 7 is Yannick Ngakoue, 10 is Shaq Barrett, 12 is Bud Dupree, 13 Matthew Judon, 17 Leonard Floyd. So all of those guys are bunched up right in that little collection there. So let's start with Ngakoue, because that's very high for him, but I understand why you would put him there. Why do you think he's worth being the 7th most attractive free agent in this class?
I mean, I think it's durability and production. You know, he's missed 2 games his entire career. He's 26 years old, and he's had at least 8 sacks every season. That doesn't like wow you. You're not like wow, but like that is very uncommon for a guy to come in the league and just for 5 straight years to have at least 8 sacks. So, I mean, if you just look at the totals kind of since he's been in the league, whether it's sacks or quarterback hits, he's not like a top 5 to 7 guy, but he is in the top 15 across the board. Now, he is a tough one, right? Because last year he gets traded twice. And if you look at the Ravens, he was not a fit there at all. I mean, he was playing, I think, fewer than 50% of the snaps in their playoff game. So it's not like he went there and lit it up. But still, to me, usually it's the nature of free agency. Like, I do the free agency grades, and I feel like I give every move like a C. You know, I can tell you right now, whoever signs Ngakoue, I'll give him a C, because I'll be like, you know what? He's a productive player. He's fine. It's good. It's not going to kill you. But would I want to pay, you know, Yannick Ngakoue $19, $20, $21 million a year? I don't think you're going to get that kind of production out of him. So I think he'll be fine. But what are your thoughts on him and kind of how he fits?
So you watched it last year, and obviously the Ravens was a little bit of a weird situation just because of the defense that they play. He came from very traditional kind of 4-3 looks in Jacksonville and then going to Minnesota, even if he was standing up a decent amount. So when you look at him in traditional pass rush situations, he's still got juice. It's undeniable. I mean, when you watch him in those moments, he's really good at it. One of my favorite stats that we kind of came up with coming into last season that I think is fascinating. He had the highest pressure rate in the NFL, according to Next Gen Stats, from 2016 to 2019, when his team was winning by 7 or more points. Hmm. When he can pin his ears back and go, and it's a defined pass rushing situation, he's really good. He's got a lot of skills in that area. But as an every down player, he gives me pause, certain aspects of his game. So if you're looking at precedent here, and you're looking at some of the deals that have been handed out to edge rushers in true free agency when guys hit the market, that's rare. You know, at the top of that list right now would be a guy like Trey Flowers, okay? So Trey Flowers got a 5-year, $90 million deal with $56 million guaranteed 2 years ago. If you're in Ngakoue's agent, that's probably where you start. And are you excited about signing that guy to an $18 million a year deal? That's pretty rich for my blood. I understand why he's up there for you, but I just think if we look at the rest of this class, I don't know if there are guys I would straight up rather have than him. Like, for example, I think I might like Carl Lawson down to down more than Yannick Ngakoue. You have to take health into account with him, obviously. He's been hurt. He's been banged up. But he had 64 pressures last season, Lawson did. 4th among edge rushers. I think he's one of the more nuanced players at that position in the entire league. So if I can give Carl Lawson $14 million a year, and if I can give Yannick Ngakoue $18 million, I'd rather have Carl Lawson. Even if the prices were the same, I think I might. So that's just one of those things where I'm not sure coming away with Ngakoue makes you a winner in the free agent market.
Yeah, no, I think you make a good point. I always like the sort of veteran edge rusher market, you know, guys who are in their 30s who you can maybe get on a 1 or 2 year, like Jason Pierre-Paul for that like 2-year, $25 million. I'm like, that's the kind of deal I would really be into if I were a general manager. You don't need to sort of lock yourself up with these younger pass rushers. And Carl Lawson is a good one, because if you're a team and looks at Ngakoue and says, all right, we know he's a very good or even a great pass rusher, but we don't like him. You know, we don't think he's the most well-rounded defensive end. Well, you know, Carl Lawson, I mean, he had 32 quarterback hits last year. That was second to TJ Watt. Like, you know, he is getting after the quarterback, even if he's a situational pass rusher, which he's been at times with the Bengals. I think last year he played about 68% of the snaps. He hadn't played more than that throughout his career. But even if you're saying, all right, this might be a little bit of a situational guy, he'll start for us, we're not going to always have him in there on first or second down, you're probably going to get more bang for your buck with a guy like Carl Lawson.
So Shaq Barrett is number 10 on your list. He's three spots behind Ngakoue. Shaq Barrett led the league in pressures among edge defenders this year. He only had 8 sacks, but he actually had more pressures than he had when he led the league in sacks 2 years ago. And even though he's 2 years older, I would much rather pay Shaq Barrett a top of the market deal than I would Yannick Ngakoue right now. If you told me you have to give Barrett that $20 million a year range deal right there among the top guys, I would feel okay doing that. I don't think I would feel the same about Ngakoue.
I definitely went back and forth on these edge rushers. It was like Ngakoue, Barrett, Judon. I might have done this like before. No, I did have the Super Bowl thing in there. It's tough because you're looking at age, you're looking at when they, you know, when they hit the market, durability. But I would agree. I mean, I love Shaq Barrett. Like, I don't have any of the qualms that I have about these other guys. I love that he can, like, he's a guy who can just wreck a game, which is, you know, what all coaches love to talk about. Like a guy who can just take over. He did it during their Super Bowl run. He's going to be looking to cash in. So I would agree with you. Yeah, I think those guys, I'm doing a position by position thing, and just in kind of the top tier of guys who are going to get paid at top of the market, I had Barrett and Ngakoue and a couple other guys who I'm sure we'll get to in there.
So Dupree is 12. He's a tough one for me. I mean, just endlessly explosive. I mean, the guy has all the physical tools in the world. We've known that. First round pick, gets his fifth year option decline, comes in, has an amazing year, gets tagged. I mean, it's kind of a familiar story with some of these guys that we're going to get to a little bit later. I can understand why he's there. He stylistically is not my favorite. He's just kind of a game wrecker in the sense that he makes these splash plays. Down to down, he's not my favorite kind of rusher. And I just think those guys are hard to evaluate. Judon is 13th on your list. He's kind of similar.
Same category.
He's a weird player. If you watch how they use him, he's played in coverage on at least 100 snaps every single year since 2016, and he's actually okay at it. So I think if you're looking at a guy like Matthew Judon, he had 9.5 sacks last year, gets the tag, has 6 sacks this year. If you look at his actual pass rushing numbers per snap, very high. I mean, he's one of the more productive pass rushers per snap in the league, but he does it in all these really weird ways. As a twister, he's unblocked a decent amount. So what do you do with him? I just think if you look at a guy like that, you have to have a defined role for him. You have to understand how he fits within your defense. If you're going to pay Matthew Judon $18 million a year to be just your straight edge guy that's rushing the passer every play, lined up as your right defensive end, I think you're going to be disappointed. So that's the question, is how do teams look at these guys and how do they kind of view their value based on the way they might be deployed within their defense?
I totally agree on those two guys. Like, do you want someone who's just going to destroy any tight end who he gets matched up against, who's going to make plays behind the line
of
scrimmage?
So many of Judon's sacks are against tight ends and backup right tackles. So many of them.
Yeah. Make plays against the run, like you said, drop in coverage, but still two very, very good players who are, you know, under 30 and have been productive. But yeah, you're not going to certainly, if you're a 4-3, like, you know, and you're just looking for a 4-3 defensive end, those aren't your guys. You have to have some creativity with your defensive coordinator, with your scheme. Judon, like you mentioned, if you just look at percentage of times he hits the quarterback based on his opportunities, only TJ Watt and Joey Bosa were ahead of him last year. So like we just said, it's not always going up against a franchise left tackle, but when he gets opportunities to rush the passer, he's done well. And then Dupree, I never know how to account anymore for like a guy coming off a torn ACL, because in the year 2021, I'm like, you know what? That's like me, you know, scratching my fingernail. These guys come back from torn ACLs and are monsters the year after. Not all the time, but I don't think we've seen in the marketplace that just the torn ACL sort of totally reduces a player's value. So I think both those guys are probably going to get paid in the same ballpark, and it's going to be, you know, near the top of the market, that $16 to $18 million a year range.
So here's why I would hesitate to give Judon like a 4-year deal worth an average of $18 million a year. Because I think what he can do for you is very similar to what Leonard Floyd did for the Rams last year. and Leonard Floyd was available for 1 year at $10 million. I just think you can find production from these twitchy athletes that aren't necessarily pure pass rushers if you know how to deploy them. And that's why I think I would I'd be hesitant about how much I would pay Leonard Floyd, because he was incredible last season. Did some amazing stuff as a pass rusher, a lot better in certain situations just on the edge than he had been previously. But I also think that they deployed him in the perfect way within that defense. And if you don't have that vision for him, again, I just think he's going to be another one of those guys that you might be a little disappointed by if you end up paying him top of the market money based on what he did in one season with the Rams.
We need a name for this. The defensive end who goes to the Rams, plays on the same line as Aaron Donald, crushes it, sets career highs, and then cashes in free agency. I don't know if any agents listen to this podcast, but if you have a defensive end, just go to the Rams, you know, maybe like a 1 year, $9-10 million. Don't worry, the payday is coming the next year. Dante Fowler gets 3 years, $45 million last offseason. Leonard Floyd very well could get that like exact same deal or in that ballpark, maybe a little bit less this offseason, but you're absolutely, yeah, no, I think you're right with that.
Just one of those things. It happens every year, right? You watch a guy get signed on a 1 year deal, and $10 million isn't a scraps deal. Like, that's a deal given to a former top 10 pick that was on a team in a precarious financial position that just couldn't afford to keep him. But then you look at that 1 year deal, he has a good season, and then he gets a monster contract. It's like, oh, well, where did that production go from 2020? It's just a tale as old as time in free agency. And that's why I think it's so dangerous to wade into these waters. Speaking of 1 year wonders, 28th on your list is to me one of the more interesting guys in this entire class. And that is Haason Reddick. Because obviously, his production last season as a pass rusher looked nothing like what he had done for his entire career up to that point. Another guy who had his fifth-year option declined. But you can see why, in his case, that might have happened. He had never had more than 200 pass rush snaps in a season before last year. The Cardinals finally decided, you know what? He's a pass rusher. That's how we're going to use him. And he was incredible. He had 55 pressures, fifth in PFF's pass rush productivity, which is a per-snap measurement. And according to Brandon Thorne's true sack rate, which I think is a really interesting stat.
Yeah,
he looks at
awesome.
The quality of stat of sacks for each individual player. Who are they playing against? What does the move look like? How early in the down does it come? He had the second highest true sack rate in the NFL after Myles Garrett. So these were not cheap sacks that he was picking up last year. So what do you do with a guy like this? I just have no idea. I absolutely could see the argument on both sides.
You're right. This is one where, and there are some other 1 year wonders on here, but with Reddick, and I don't know if it's just like you're telling yourself a story, but we've watched the league, we've watched the Cardinals, and every year it's like, all right, what are they doing with Haason Reddick this year? Who's the defensive coordinator this year? Why is he playing off ball linebacker? Half his snaps, and so I do feel like he's been sort of just like yanked around more than any like front seven defensive player in the last few years, and like the talent's always there. And I looked at the same thing with Brandon's true sack score, and I was like, wow, that's crazy. That I know he had the 1-5 sack game, but he was absolutely really productive. Now, it is tough. I mean, I don't think he's going to be in that same price tier as some of the other players we mentioned. Does he definitely just cash in this offseason? Does he say, I'm going to sign a 1 year, I don't know, $12 million deal, show I can do this again in the right scheme, and then I'll only be 28 next offseason and really cash in? It is really tough to know what the market for him is going to be. It's a little bit, to a degree, you know, I feel this way about Curtis Samuel on offense. Like, he's got to get with the right
coordinator. Oh, we'll get there.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that with Reddick. Like, please get him in a scheme with a coach who is a big fan of his, knows how to use him, and let's see if he can kind of match the potential that he showed last year.
So let's get to some guys kind of in the more bargain bin area of the edge rusher class, because I think that this is a useful exercise when you're comparing them to guys who might be at the top of the market. 39th on your list is, again, to me, one of the more interesting guys in this class, and that's Romeo Okwara from the Lions. He had 10 sacks last year, and if you watch those sacks, they are not cheap. Long levers, decent flexibility for a guy his height, all of that stuff. He's only 26 years old. Here are the guys who had a better pass rush productivity last year than Romeo Okwara: Joey Bosa, TJ Watt, Shaq Barrett, Trey Hendrickson. That's it. So what do you do with this guy who has started half of the games for the Lions and had 10 sacks? Is he somebody that, all right, if I can get him for 70% of what I would pay for somebody like Matthew Judon, wouldn't you rather have Romeo Okwara? And I tend to land on yes in that situation.
I land on yes. Yeah. I mean, I think he's probably what, like a $8 to $10 million a year player, because there is risk involved. I mean, his first four seasons, he had 10 sacks, but is this a case of a player developing and maturing and finding his way? I mean, he's only 26 years old. This is the type of player I would take swings on in free agency, because you can really make the case that he's an ascending player, and that by year two or year three, maybe even year one, you're going to have a player who's under market value. Like, there's upside there. You know, that's kind of how you, I don't want to say win these deals, because it feels kind of like cheap, but you know what I mean. It's how you get more than you're paying for with some of these players. That's how you win in free agency. So he's like one of my favorite sleeper options on the entire list. He also rated very well in Brandon's metrics, yep. which I love there. Yeah. And so he's absolutely a player. I would rather take a flyer on him than one of the top tier guys at a more expensive price.
I totally agree. And I think that looking into roles and how they might change and expand is always worthwhile when you're thinking about free agents. So let's look at Okwara versus Trey Hendrickson, for example, right? Okwara gets 10 sacks, quality sacks, on a defensive line with no players on it. Like, no players on it. The yeah. worst pass rush in the NFL. Hendrickson gets 13.5 on a Saints team where he is, I don't know, the third or fourth best defensive lineman on that team, and probably gets the third or fourth most attention among that group. So who had the better season? Who was a more impressive prospect? Who would you rather pay? And those are the questions that you have to ask right now. And I think that's where teams make mistakes. When you're looking at a third rusher and bumping him up to your number one or number two rusher and paying him as such, that's where you fail to get value in free agency. And I totally agree with you. I think Okwara might be the type of guy where you can get some value, and those deals and hitting on those deals are rare when guys get to the market.
Yeah, not only help on the defensive line, but even from a coverage perspective, you know, everyone knew what the Lions were doing on most snaps. Meanwhile, the Saints, it's like you watch it four times and are like, wait, what coverage are they in? Quarterbacks are just holding on to the ball. And I do think there were a lot of coverage sacks, sacks where another player is getting the first pressure and Hendrickson is cleaning up. It's weird, because I went from thinking like, oh, you know, Hendrickson's kind of a nice underrated player, to now I would not want to be the team that pays Trey Hendrickson like, you know, $13 million or whatever he's going to get based on 13.5 sacks and 25 quarterback hits last season.
I totally agree. So one other guy before we move on, I wanted to talk about, because I was shocked at where he was. You had Jadeveon Clowney 44th on your list. Are you just out?
I mean, Jadeveon Clowney played 8 games last year, didn't have a sack, and then had a season-ending knee surgery.
Listen, I'm not trying to come at you here. I can understand why you would. That's just really low for a guy with that sort of name recognition.
He's almost certainly going to have to settle for a 1-year deal. You look at the market. How can you justify that he's going to get more than $13 million? Maybe I went overboard there. I don't know, but I think he's, what, going to be like a 1-year... Like maybe the Leonard Floyd deal from last year? Is that what he's going to get?
I think that sounds about right.
Okay. But teams were obviously, they were obviously scared by the knee injury to a degree. And then he goes down. I mean, I don't remember one play of Jadeveon Clowney from this year.
What was your favorite moment of the Jadeveon Clowney Titans era?
So I don't know. Yeah, we'll see. To be clear, this whole list is getting redone for like a top 150 or top 200 that will come out on The Athletic next week. So this is a good exercise where I will revisit all these, and then we'll go from there.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
All right, let's move on to the receivers because that is a stacked group and there's a lot of them on this list. So we talked about the guys at the top that we probably think are going to get franchised and aren't going to be in play here. So let's talk about the guys a step below that. 11th on your list is Juju Smith-Schuster. I think it might be a little bit different now with Joe Douglas there. But Juju Smith-Schuster, in my opinion, is the perfect like 2014 Jets overpay free agency player. Like, that is exactly what he feels like to me. Would you feel comfortable giving Juju Smith-Schuster $16 million a year and having him be your number one receiver? Would you feel good about that?
No, not being my number one receiver, and that is what he's going to get. Again, it's the nature of free agency. I kind of like Juju Smith-Schuster. I think he's better than his stats indicate. I think he brings a toughness. I think he can, you know, make you plays on third down. Like a team like the Green Bay Packers, I know they're not going to be paying $16 million a year, but if you told me they're going to keep Adams, they're going to play MVS or Lazard at the other outside receiver spot and give me Smith-Schuster just like on the inside to make plays in the intermediate part of the field, I would love that fit for him. And I think he would be a player next year when their offense is tearing it up that we're saying, look at all these key clutch plays he makes. He gives Aaron Rodgers kind of a security blanket in the middle of the field. So I like him. It's going to be an overpay, you know, whatever you pay for him. But it's crazy that he's only 24 years old. I mean, the youngest player probably to enter free agency this year because of how young he was when he entered the league. So I do think you can project that there could be still a lot of development with him.
I just, what is the best part of his game? What if you were saying like, this is what makes Juju Smith-Schuster a very above average receiver, like a borderline elite receiver, what would it be?
I like his toughness, which would not be on my list of traits I'm looking for at most wide receivers, but I do like that aspect of his game. I mean, he's a slot receiver. You're not lining him up on the outside to win against top quarterbacks, so there are going to be certainly those limitations.
And I think that's part of the reading into his value as well. If you think you have to play him in the slot, is he worth the contract you're going to give him? If he has to be your de facto number one receiver by virtue of the way you pay him. If you look, and the numbers this year are brutal, by the way. He was 37th in the NFL in yards per route run from the slot. He averaged 8.6 yards per reception. That's not all on him. It's the style of offense they were playing. It's what we got out of Ben Roethlisberger. But you have to go back 2 years to get his real production or production that would excite you. In 2018, he had 1,426 yards on 111 catches. I think if you look at it, there was one, I went back and I watched a bunch of his catches today, just a bunch of his targets, because I was curious. I was like, I just don't have a feel for him and what he should be worth. So there was a play he made against the Broncos in 2018. It was a 97-yard touchdown. He has two 97-yard touchdowns in his career, by the way. So it's 100 yards on one play. So that inflates the numbers a little bit. But it was against the Broncos. They were playing cover three, and he runs straight down the right sideline against a corner. He caught a 97-yard touchdown. The reason that that was possible is because the middle of the field safety was playing on the other side of the right hash over Antonio Brown. So that year when he had all of that production is when Antonio Brown was still one of the more dynamic, important, valuable receivers in the entire league. What has he done without Antonio Brown on the field? I'm just trying to play devil's advocate here. I just think that he has not done enough recently for me to be excited about paying him. And I understand the quarterback play wasn't there, but I just think you're taking a big risk if you're projecting the guy we've seen over the last 2 years as somebody you want to pay top 12 receiver money to.
Yeah, I think that's fair. But the market for those slot guys, you know, like Cooper Kupp, Adam Thielen, those guys are all getting in that $16 million per year range. It's tough because 2019...
I like those guys way more than him.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah, but you know, they didn't reach free agency where they can see who's bidding on them, that kind of thing. I mean, 2019 is tough. I mean, no one was going to put up any numbers
really hard
in that offense in 2019. You are right. I mean, their offense was just brutal to watch this last season. It's fair. They draft wide receivers well. Other guys are flashing more than he did. I think I like him more than you. At the same time, would I be excited about paying him $16 million a year to be my slot receiver who's not necessarily going to make any plays down the field? No, I would be hesitant to do that.
I think I like Corey Davis more than him. If I were paying one of those two guys, I think I'd rather have Corey Davis, who's 20th on your list. So if you look at it last year, Davis was 5th in the league in yards per route run. Devontae, Justin yeah. Jefferson, AJ Brown, and Julio were the only guys that hit certain statistical benchmarks that were better than him. And you go and you watch it, he looks like that. He looks explosive. He looks physical. And there's no projection of, can he be a guy on the outside? Because we saw him do that last year. If I were saying, all right, I know these aren't true number one guys, but because of the nature of the market, I have to pay them like one, I would feel much more comfortable doing that with Corey Davis, even a year removed from him having his fifth-year option declined, than I would with Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, I think he definitely has a higher floor. I mean, you've seen him be a number two receiver who can have nearly 1,000 yards. I mean, he just did that last year. He's 26 years old. And so I think you could even, you know, there will be teams, I think, who talk themselves into him being that number one guy. And so maybe there is that ceiling. He's young enough. You mentioned the advanced metrics were very good on him in terms of yards per route run. So the Titans declining his fifth-year option, I don't know if you read anything into that other than just the team feeling like they could use their resources elsewhere or potentially making a mistake. But yeah, I think he seems like a safe wide receiver option, whereas you're right with Smith-Schuster could be a deal where after a year or two, like the team's looking to unload him and it's just been a complete disaster.
I think with Davis, a team like Washington, if they can't get the top guys because they ended up getting tagged. Davis, over the last 2 years, 70% contested catch percentage, highest in the NFL over 2019 and 2020. You can see the physicality that he plays.
Yeah.
You pair him with a guy that's as twitchy and as sudden as Terry McLaurin, that's interesting to me. And I think that if that's the kind of, that's the pool of players you're shopping in, if you're Washington, he might be the best option. The guy who is the definition of boomer bust with all of this is the guy you have next. 29th on your list is Will Fuller. I have no idea what to do with this. I just don't know.
He very well could be looking at a one-year deal going into this offseason. I don't know if you're a team, how you can feel good about a guy who had so many durability issues, and then the 1 year it looks like he's fixed his durability issues, he gets suspended for using performance enhancing drugs, right? Yeah, violating yes. the PED policy. And so he was having a monster year. It looked like, wow, this is like an all-time contract year. The guy stayed healthy, he's already got nearly 900 yards, and then he gets suspended. I mean, there's so many red flags there. It's like the thing you don't want to do in free agency is sign a guy like that to a big deal. So I wonder if he's looking at a one-year deal somewhere and then hoping that he can have a similar year without the suspension, of course, and then re-entering the marketplace next offseason.
So the negatives are obvious. You just said a lot of it. He's played 53 of a possible 80 games over the course of his career. Oof. That's brutal. He's missed at least 5 games every single year since his rookie season. Obviously, this was a PED suspension and not an injury. But again, that's a red flag. That's something to be concerned about.
Yeah.
But then you watch him play. And I understand, and I've said this a lot, I don't think you should overpay for pure speed, because I think there are a lot of 4-3 guys in the NFL. You can go find Jalen Guyton undrafted and let him run down the field very fast. But I think Fuller weaponizes his speed in a way few guys do. Will Fuller is going to catch some deep digs for you over the middle of the field. He's going to do some stuff in space. He's not just fast. And you combine that playmaking ability with a little bit of nuance as a receiver, and you come away with a rare talent. So is there going to be a team that's willing to roll the dice because he provides that dynamic element to your offense? And I think there might be. It might be in his best interest to take one of those one-year deals. But I just think that if you look at him and you look at the ceiling of what he can be, compared to what the ceiling of a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster can be, to me, it's two completely different considerations.
Yeah, that's fair. If you're talking yourself into the ceiling, then that would definitely be the case for Will Fuller.
I'm a risk taker, Shiel. I like to live dangerously here.
Given what we're talking about with a lower cap and limited cap space for a lot of these teams, my gosh, I would just be like, I am not taking that risk. Let someone else take it. If they cash in and he stays healthy for the next 3 years, plays every game, no suspension, and is one of the top 10 receivers in the NFL, then more power to you. I'm not going to be the team taking that risk.
Let's get to the next guy on your list. Couple spots below him. 33, Curtis Samuel. You mentioned him already. To me, one of the more fascinating guys in this entire class, because I think you're completely right. It's going to be the team that can find the right role for him. And what can he look like as a more expanded part of an offense? Even in Carolina, where I think they're well coached, you still have guys like Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore. He's the third option at best, maybe 3B if Christian McCaffrey is there in the passing game. What could he look like on a team like the Packers, for example, that need that kind of shifty space player that they don't have in their lineup right now? I think that he could be available at a decent price and give teams, even if his role isn't necessarily congruent with what he's got to get paid, I do think that he's the type of guy who could give teams a facet of their offense that they're missing right now.
This one is so scheme and coach dependent for me.
I could
see this being a disastrous signing. I mean, look at Curtis Samuel, 2017 to 2019. He ranked 130th in yards per route run. I mean, he was one of the least efficient wide receivers in the NFL. Like, his catch rate was under 60%, and the guy wasn't catching bombs. This wasn't Will Fuller. Like, they had no idea what to do with him. What I always said was the idea of Curtis Samuel was always better than the player until this last season. And then this last season, he did get unlocked a little bit. I mean, he played a lot better. He had 850 yards. He caught nearly 80% of his targets. Joe Brady knew what to do with him. It was more an efficiency-based offense. So, like, you know, I just feel like coaches fall in love with the Curtis Samuel type year in and year out, whether it's the draft or free agency. They say, oh, we got this guy. We're going to put him in motion. We can use him on jet sweeps. We can hand him the ball out of the backfield. We're, you know, this is our new toy. We're going to do so much with him. And then, like, probably over half the time, maybe 75% of the time, they have no idea what to do with him. And it's like a 3rd and 9, and they try something with him, and their fan base is going, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. But when it works, it looks really good, and he really can help you. So I don't know what the perfect team is for him, but my gosh, if I were like a GM and I had a offensive coach who thought he was like a little bit smarter than he actually was and didn't have a lot of results, I would be like, don't even, like, just cross him off your list. We're not going near Curtis Samuel.
We call this the Tavon Austin disease. That's what it is. So if you're looking at contracts handed out in free agency to receivers, it's kind of hard for me to figure out what his market might be, because he's unlike a lot of other guys that have hit free agency because his skill set is so unique. I mean, I'm trying to think of the right comparison here as I'm going through the list of guys who've gotten paid. It's just hard to do. I really don't know what the best comp would be. Can you think of anybody that hit the market that you could think of a similar price point, a similar usage, just a template for what he might get?
It is tough. I mean, you would look at him, I would think, and I don't have the numbers on how often he was in the slot. I think he was probably in the slot at least like half the time, right? Or kind of that gadgety type guy. There's not a lot. I mean, the slot market is probably, for the most part, this making me think I really over... I think my Smith-Schuster projection there was probably way too high, because the top slot guys don't get that kind of money. I mean, even a guy like Tyler Lockett, who's definitely better than Juju Smith-Schuster, he got like around $11 million per year as more of a slot receiver. So I think that would be the neighborhood for a guy like Curtis Samuel. I don't think there's a perfect comp, but I would think kind of that $9 to $11 million range would probably be what he's looking at.
So Curtis Samuel spent 71.8% of his snaps in the slot last season, which ranked 21st among receivers. But if you look, he was primarily a slot receiver. But again, his skill set is just so much different than some of those not as explosive, more short area quickness slot guys. It's just a different consideration. So I don't know. It's tough to say. I just don't know what you'd want from him in your offense. He's going to have a really interesting market. All right. Let's get to one more position group I wanted to hit here. We're probably not going to have enough time to dig into some of the offensive linemen. I think that Corey Linsley and Joe Tooney, just to, very quickly, both of those guys worth paying. I think they'll get near top of the market deals. I think that they're the type of players that they're hitting free agency because of circumstances. The Packers have no money. You know, the Patriots are in kind of a weird position. I think both of them are high-level starters that deserve... Like, if Corey Linsley got the Mitch Morse contract, I think that makes sense. And Tooney, it's kind of a weird situation because the guard market has been fairly stagnant over the last couple of years. You look at the biggest AAV values in that entire group, and it's really Zach Martin and Andrew Norwell, both of whom were paid 2 years ago. So can he top that and kind of reset that at 15 or so million a year? That'll be something to watch. But I think both of those guys are worth paying. I think they are such high floor players that they're unlike some of the other bets teams are going to make at these more flashy positions in free agency.
Yeah, Linsley went from being like underrated to he was a first team all pro, I think, last year. So he's hitting the market at the right time. I think he will get paid at the top of the market. I think Ryan Kelly said it last year. So that's like, around $12 million or so, would not surprise me. And then the guard market, like you mentioned, sure, very well could get $15 million a year if he doesn't get tagged. And then you would say, all right, maybe Tooney comes in a little bit right under that. Tooney just seems like a really safe, you're not going to be like regretting that. He might, he might not make a Pro Bowl, but like, he's just going to start for you. I don't think he's ever missed a start. So durability, knows how to play. I think those, I think the offensive line market is actually pretty good. There's a lot of interesting guys there.
I'd love to see Linsley end up on a team like the Chargers. I just think that they would be a perfect fit for him. You have a young quarterback, super smart guy, could really help with protections, getting used to a new offense, all of that stuff. I think he's going to be a really nice presence for whatever team signs him. Corey's not a loud guy, but really cerebral, understands the game extremely well. I just think that he's going to be a really good signing for somebody. All right, let's get to a position that has a lot more guys to talk about, and a group that I think... There being this many guys hitting the market at this spot, I think says so much about the way the sport is going and the way the positional value is going. And I want to get into some of that. And that's safety. So 25, 26, 30, and 31 on your list are all, I guess, quote unquote, free safeties. Marcus May at 25, John Johnson at 26, Marcus Williams at 30, and Anthony Harris at 31. It is so interesting to me that all of these guys are bunched up and I don't know who's going to sign them. And they all seem to be hitting the market for a similar reason. With Johnson and Williams, you have two teams that are consistently willing to spend all the money in the world, but decided to spend it on other guys and not these two. With May, the Jets have Jets could do anything they want. The Jets have tons of free agent money, but they don't seem super motivated to give it to him. So what do you think that says about the ways that safeties are being valued on the market right now? The fact that these teams willing to spend cash over cap all the time and teams flush with cap space are willing to let these guys test the market.
It's weird. I was even going to say it when we were talking about Justin Simmons earlier with the franchise tag. Like, I can't understand why the Broncos, I feel like that should be an easy negotiation. Hey, Justin Simmons, we're going to make you the top paid safety in the NFL. You're going to beat Buda Baker's deal. You're going to get $15 million a year. You made the Pro Bowl last year. You've been durable. You're 27. He's been their Walter Payton Man of the Year Award nominee 2 years in a row. Who wins that 2 years in a row? I like can't understand like the Broncos. It's like, why? This should be the type of guy you're trying to pay. So I don't have a great theory. I've sort of been under the impression that safety play is like increasingly important. The guys with the range, especially if you want to be a single high team, you need that center fielder with range. You always notice these guys when you have poor safety play. So I don't have a great reason for why these guys are hitting the market, why some teams have been reluctant. Have you been workshopping a theory on your own?
So let's look at the biggest safety AAVs in the league that aren't tag guys. So take Simmons out of the equation because that bumps it up a little bit. Buda Baker's number one at 14.8. Okay. He was fine last year. He's a nice player. He's fun. Eddie Jackson is number two. Eddie Jackson has not played up to that deal since he was given that deal, and he has struggled since Vic Fangio moved on from Chicago. Kevin Byard is three. Kevin Byard of the 30th ranked by DVOA Titans defense from last season. Landon Collins is number four. Landon Collins did not play last year, and Washington finished third in defensive DVOA.
That one was crazy. Landon Collins, as soon as it was signed.
Tyrann Mathieu is next. I think that one's a little bit of a cheater because he plays multiple positions. He can play slot corner. He can do a lot of different things for you. Then further down the list, Devin McCourty, Kareem Jackson, and then LaMarcus Joyner. That deal has been a disaster for the Raiders. Teams paying for safeties have rarely been happy that they did it. And I don't know if that's specific to the players that were signed, but I also think that, like you said, if you have a single high guy and you have a Jesse Bates, for example, that can just cover the entire field for you and all that, that has value. But I think fewer and fewer teams are playing like that. There are so many more too high looks now. And I think that John Johnson is a perfect example. John Johnson, in my opinion, looked like one of the better safeties in the league last year. But he also is a guy who ran 4.6 at the combine, who played in a lot of those nebulous too high looks where it's more about awareness and presence than it is about these explosive traits. So are you, as a team looking at him, going to say, oh, if we use him that way, we can get an elite player, let's pay for one? Or are you going to look at him as a former third round pick available 91st overall and think, we can find a smart, aware football player in the third or fourth round, like Jordan Fuller is doing for the Rams right now, and it's not worth paying up for that guy? I can understand it both ways. I just think that the way the position is going and the types of physical traits and types of mental traits you need to be good at it, you can find those guys under some rocks in a way you can't at a spot like corner. And I'm wondering if that's affecting how the market is going to shake out.
I think the too high thing is such a key point there because, yes, if you're going to be playing a lot of split safety coverages, you know, it's different than those Seahawks Legion of Boom teams where, you know, everyone
and
there were saying...
I think that's getting phased out.
Yeah, you know, they would all say, all right, without Earl Thomas, like, this defense, who knows what it would look like. It is him who is preventing all these big plays. I think Dan Quinn at one point was asked, like, who is the most important player on, like, that great defense? And I think he said Earl Thomas, and for good reason. If that guy's got to stop all the seams, stop the posts, cover the middle of the field, be able to come downhill and stop the run when he's in open space against a great running back, like, that's a lot you're being asked to do. Now, if you're playing quarters or two-man or, you know, whatever split safety coverage you're playing, well, you don't have those same responsibilities. Not that you don't want good players there, but it's all a matter of resource allocation. If we're playing two deep safeties, is that really where we want to spend that kind of money? So I think you make a good point. That could be a reason why a lot of these guys, specifically, like you mentioned, John Johnson, Marcus Williams, right? They play a lot of two deep looks.
Same deal.
Same deal. So and even the Jets with Marcus May, you know, Saleh gets pegged as kind of that Carroll tree. But if you look at the 49ers numbers, I mean, they played a lot of quarters, two deep coverages the last 2 years. So who knows what he plans to implement with the Jets, but he could be thinking the same thing there.
So I think the Marcus Williams point is great because that's exactly right. They play a lot of two-way coverages. He's a playmaker. I like him as a player. I think that he has a little bit more range than a guy like Johnson does, for example, all of that. But I think that there are similar things to take into account. I think May is in a slightly different class than the rest of these guys just based on what they've asked him to do. So if you go look at it, he was more of a true free safety when Jamal Adams was there, where he was playing a lot of center field because they had somebody that played all over the place. But this year, he was playing in the box a decent amount. Also, I think he's a really solid guy in the slot, playing man against tight ends, things like that. Yeah. His ball skills are good. I've just seen him do more things than some of the other guys on this list. So if I was going to pay one of these players, he would probably be my answer. But again, I just think that there's a reason there hasn't been a robust market for safeties. And these teams, like the Saints, like the Rams, who are more than willing to give extensions to their guys in-house when they think they're worth extending, have allowed these guys to test the market and maybe walk.
Yeah, I like May too. I look at the Jets and I'm just like, if you have a good player, you can sign the good player. Like you have cap space. You don't have a lot of talent. You've got you've got all these holes to fill. That one's a little puzzling. Now maybe he'll hit free agency and then he will re-sign there. But I agree with you. I mean, when you watched the Jets last year, he was one of the players who popped a little bit. Who you thought, all right, he looks like a quality player who's only 28 years old, who you can really build with and maybe re-sign and make him part of this next regime. But I guess a lot of it comes down to where they want to spend some of those resources.
I think it's really interesting also that if you look at where the trees from where some of these players come from, the idea that Eddie Jackson wasn't very good when Fangio left. Now you have Justin Simmons playing for Fangio. You have John Johnson playing in a Fangio-inspired defense. Right. And those two high looks that really only the Rams and Broncos do at the clip that they use them, how does that impact how we evaluate safeties within that scheme? I think that it makes it a little bit murkier. And I think that is probably one of the things that's affected this market in a way that isn't totally obvious at first glance, but has had more of an impact than we might think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, talking through it, it makes a lot of sense. And we'll see what those guys get on the open market and also what kind of schemes, you know, the teams that actually pay up for these safeties, it will be interesting to look at. All right, are these teams that are still playing a lot of cover one and other single high looks, or is there going to be a two deep team that says, we just want the best players, we have money to spend, and they're going to be effective in our scheme anyway?
I promise you there's going to be one or two teams that's exactly what they say, no matter what type of defense they're playing. Is there anybody on this list we didn't hit that you feel like we have to talk about this person before we move on? I think Aaron Jones is probably the last guy that we should probably discuss really quickly. If he leaves, do you think he's going to be just another notch in the running back value discussion, argument, discourse? Because I like Aaron Jones. I love Aaron Jones. I wrote a story about Aaron Jones 2 years ago. I think Aaron Jones is one of like the more wonderful people you'll ever meet within the football world. People love him. He's a really interesting, fun player. They use him in a lot of dynamic ways as a receiver down the field. I mean, he is about everything you could want in an NFL running back right now. I don't think I would want to pay $8 million a year for Aaron Jones.
I think I fall on the same side of it. I mean, I would not be paying big money for running backs. I'm kind of with you. I really like the player. He's 26 years old. He's been really productive. He's a three down back. He kind of checks all the boxes you're looking for. But I mean, we've seen this story time and again where this doesn't work out. Now, having said that, it's kind of like the league has not caught on, really. I mean, really look at the last year, Dalvin Cook over $12 million a year, Joe Mixon $12 million a year, Derrick Henry got his deal from the Titans, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Zeke Elliott. I mean, all these running backs that are in the Aaron Jones tier are making between $12 and $16 million per year. So if he's going to hit the market, I do think there's a team that's definitely going to pay him, certainly in that Mixon, Dalvin Cook, $12 to $13 million a year category. And I think there is a chance that he gets a deal that makes just, Twitter go crazy with the running backs, do they matter or not matter argument, because I think there's a chance that a team with cap space could look at him and say, we are going to pay him even more than that.
So if you look at the AAVs among running backs right now, okay, I'm going to give you this list and I want you to tell me what's different about these players than from Aaron Jones. Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon. What is different about those guys than if Aaron Jones were to sign a contract?
Is it their workload, where they were drafted? No, I'm 0-2.
All of those deals were handed out by the teams that drafted them.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
If you're going to make an argument for giving a running back money, I think it's in pursuit of locker room harmony, and it's to do right by the guys in your own building. To me, the comp for what Aaron Jones would be this year is Melvin Gordon last year. Do you think the Melvin Gordon contract is a good idea?
Well, I think much more of Aaron Jones the player than I did Melvin. I thought that was one of the worst contracts anybody signed last offseason. So if you were a team with cap space and you signed Aaron Jones to $8 million a year, I would not crush you. Now, if you sign him to $12 or $13 million per year, I'm going to be like, all right, that's probably not the best use of your resources.
It's tough for me. I love Aaron Jones a lot, and I think he's a really good player. I just think that $8 million is probably better spent elsewhere.
Yeah, to be clear, if I were the GM, I would not be spending that. But I think there is a situation where I would look at it and say, all right, that's not the end of the world. I'm not going to go all in on the what are you doing crazy GM signing a running back thing.
I really miss Mike Maccagnan, because it would just been so easy to put these guys on the Jets and then we could just move on. But it's going to become
Le'Veon
a little harder
Bell,
to do this
is
shit.
Is he even going
to
find a deal? I did these running back rankings. I'm like, is Le'Veon Bell going to be in the league next year? I have no idea. He might not be.
All right. That's all we got. Again, I said we weren't going to talk about all of these players. I think we probably hit like 38 of the 50. Shil Kapadia, thank you very much, my friend. Anything that you're excited about that you want people to check out? You're doing a ton of free agency work. You are doing it by position. All of those are available on The Athletic. Anything else that you're working on that you want to let people know about?
Yeah, those are continuing to go up. Like I said, I got Brandon Thorne for the offensive lineman. As you know, he's a machine. So his breakdowns of like the top 20 guys was amazing. So check that out. We'll have pass rushers, defensive backs, linebackers the rest of the week. And then next week, we will do the top 150 or top 200, whatever I'm feeling like doing at that time. That'll come out on Monday of next week.
You'll know how much gas Shil has left in the tank based on how many guys are on that list. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. We will be back tomorrow with Lindsay and a special guest. Again, we're going to be trying to hit just the financial environment around this free agency period, how the cap is going to affect it, what sort of players might benefit, which sort of players might be in trouble based on some of the things that are happening. So we're going to try to kind of set the stage for what the next couple weeks might look like tomorrow. In the meantime, please rate and review the podcast on your podcast platform of choice. I would sincerely appreciate you doing that. We're back, so it'd be nice if people would do that stuff again. Also, please subscribe to The Athletic. It's the only place you can get Shil's top 50 free agents. It's the only place you can get his crazy, just batshit insane update to it next week. Please subscribe, theathletic.com/footballshow. I promise you will not regret it. As always, guys, appreciate you listening. We'll talk to you later.
This was The Athletic Football Show.